Erasing America is the title of an intriguing new book. It's just been released. It is by Dr. James S. Robbins, who's a senior fellow for national security affairs at the American Foreign Policy Council. He's also a commentary writer for USA Today, and he's a member of the advisory board to the National Civil War Museum. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Dr. Robbins, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay, so a very intriguing title. I'm very interested in this. And by the way, tell us what the subtitle is, because I think that kind of says a lot.
Oh, well, it's Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past.
Oof.
And it's in a way, it's an homage to George Orwell.
Wow. You know, but this is so important that we can't lose our past. I mean, America, what was it Reagan said? It was something like it's the last best hope of America, you know, of the whole world in terms of, if we can't get this right, then maybe nobody can. You'd hate to see this, but why did you write the book? Tell us what kind of was the catalyst for it.
Well, just seeing the drift of things in the country, there were a series of events like statues being torn down and vandalized, not just Confederates, but people like Thomas Jefferson and proposal to blow up Mount Rushmore, for example. And also people dishonoring the national anthem and the flag and calling into question faith in the public space. It all just seemed to be part of a single trend. So I wanted to put together a book that would bring all of those threads together.
Hmm. And through the years, as an opinion writer with USA Today and then also Washington Times, and you have a PhD from Tufts, so you've done a lot of writing related to politics, related to history, or all of the above?
Oh, yeah. Most of the books I've written deal with history, a lot of military history, and my background actually is in national security, but of course there's a lot of history there too.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you a question. Some people might want to say, well, who cares about history? All that matters is what we do moving forward. Why is American history worth preserving?
I think history is worth preserving because we have a great story to tell. The problem right now is that the revisionist impulse is so strong in history that the only stories that are being told are the negative ones. And it's true that every country has the good and the bad when you look back on it. But if all you're telling are the negative things, then why would anybody care about your country? Why would anyone want to honor it or support it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because when you look at, for example, George Washington, and I've had the privilege to co-write a big, thick book about the faith of George Washington. And, you know, okay, so he did own slaves, and that's terrible. And he freed them when he died. He freed them. He was the only one of nine slave-holding presidents that freed his slaves, again, albeit at his death. But this guy is a real hero in many different ways. I would imagine you feel the same way about George Washington. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't live too far from Mount Vernon, and I admire George Washington. He was the founder of our country. And, yes, he had this difficult legacy with slavery, like a lot of the founders and a lot of the people back then, but it's not everything about him. He wasn't just a slave master. He had a lot of other much more important salient characteristics that we honor him for. When Yale University was looking at removing the name of John Calhoun from one of their colleges, you know, he was a proponent of states' rights, an important senator and vice president, they came up with a measure called the principal legacy test. Like, you have to look at the whole person and say, you know, what did they do good, what did they do bad, and what has survived of that. And with Calhoun, they determined that, well, there wasn't enough of a legacy to preserve him. But I think if we're going to say that there's not enough legacy from George Washington to want to honor him, then we really don't have anybody with a legacy.
Hmm. I would agree with you. Okay, here's some of the things that are brought out in reference to, you know, the what your publicist is saying about the book. In Massachusetts, Simmons College claims saying "God bless you" is an Islamophobic microaggression. In Virginia, school districts have banned To Kill a Mockingbird and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn as parents complained about the racial slurs in the books. Across the country, Christmas songs and movies are labeled as racist and sexist and then banned. In California, a San Francisco school district wants to rename George Washington High School because our first president owned slaves. In parks and squares across the South, statues of Confederate generals and soldiers are disappearing. And on it goes. Your comments?
Well, that kind of ties together a lot of the different threads that I address in the book to show that it's not just one thing. It's not like a single issue like a Robert E. Lee statue or something like that. It's a broad-based assault on the American story, on the American legacy. And the intention of it, in my opinion, is to wipe the slate clean so that the progressives can write in the future whatever story they want. One emphasizing the values that they want to bring, which I don't think are traditional American values of freedom and the individual and liberty.
My friend Bill Federer, who's an historian, written a lot of books. He's even been cited by the U.S. Supreme Court. But he and I were in touch through email just the other day, and I asked him, how many governments did France have since 1789 when they had the French Revolution? 1789 is the year our Constitution went into effect, and George Washington, sworn in on the Holy Bible, it was April 30th, 1789. So this is when the Constitution goes into effect. So our Constitution is still in effect. How many governments did France have from 1789 during their bloody revolution, which was anti-God? Our revolution was pro-God. How many governments have they had? And the answer is 20. He counted 20 separate governments, the most current one lasting since 1958. It's just I found that to be very fascinating. But the people who want to replace America, I don't know if they realize what they could possibly be opening the world up to, including America up to.
Oh, I completely agree. When I hear suggestions that we have a new constitutional convention, which, it's an interesting idea to discuss. But then I think about who were the people at the original constitutional convention, the Washington and Madison and, other luminaries. And who would be at the Constitutional Convention today? Is there anyone who even holds a candle to some of those founders? What's our list?
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely right. And it would be just basically, an homage to political correctness. So give us an overview of the book in terms of the major components. Walk us through. This is a brand new book. It's just being released around the time of this recording. And so we're excited about that. But go ahead and tell us about the contents of the book.
Well, in the content, it's sort of a widening circle. It starts with the protests against Confederates. And then we take the next step out to look at protests against the founders and then against other presidents and luminaries of American history. And then the next step, a protest of the symbols of America, like the anthem and the flag. And then about faith in America and how that works and the war on Christmas and these types of things. And then in the back of the book, I discuss the division, why is this happening and how is this manifested and is there a potential for a new civil war, and end up with some helpful suggestions to try to avoid all that.
Comment on faith. How important is faith in the American tradition?
Well, it's critical in the American tradition because the country was founded in part by people who wanted to find a place to worship freely. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they were being severely oppressed and even killed in Europe, and so people wanted to come here to pursue their faith. And the traditional view of this was that people could set up communities, and in their communities, they might have a large faith element or they might have a small faith element, but people were basically allowed to kind of do their own thing without any kind of government interference. But starting in the 1960s, at least, judges and courts and magistrates have decided that it's more important to have kind of uniform practice throughout the entire country. And so these sort of civic expressions of faith were squashed out.
And it's so true. In fact, the more I study this, especially when I deal with some of the details, when I look at some of the details involving, let's say, some of the New England colonies, I mean, the whole thing was all about Christianity. It was an errand into the wilderness, and they weren't tolerant of others at first, and then later, during the time of the American Revolution, people learned to be more tolerant. But even at the time of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence, several of the states, individual states, had actual statewide denominations, Christian denominations that was the state church of that particular state. And, they worked through all that, but it was Christianity that gave birth to so many aspects of this country. And today you wouldn't know it. You would not know it.
Oh, yeah. The notion of America as Zion was a really important theme in the early part of our country. In fact, the first suggestion for a seal for the United States, a suggestion that was made by Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, was that it show Moses leading the Israelites in the wilderness, with the pillar of fire. Yeah. So, I mean, that's how prevalent that theme was.
Yeah. And even the dollar bill on the back of it has got this symbol, and some people have said, oh, this is a Masonic symbol of the eye and the pyramid and so forth. Well, Charles Thompson, who was the secretary of the Continental Congress, the Continental Congress of 1776 that produced the Declaration of Independence and so forth, he's the one that designed that, and he said that this stands for the eye of God, and they have this Latin phrase, Annuit Septis, and this is on every dollar bill. And what that means in Latin is he, as in God, he has favored our undertakings. And even our national motto, in God we trust. But it seems like all these things are under attack today.
Oh, definitely. Everywhere you go. And part of the problem with that is the way the courts have structured things, any kind of pressure group can bring a lawsuit, a constitutional suit, against any jurisdiction that somehow has a God component or a reference to God or anything like that. So it's really front-loaded for these complainer groups to bring expensive lawsuits that in many cases communities can't afford to contest them. So they just kind of cave.
Mm. And it's been happening really in earnest in the last 50 years or so. What about our national motto? The average person might not even realize it, but it's In God We Trust.
The interesting thing about that from a legal standpoint is that because it is the national motto and that was, passed by Congress, it's actually very resistant to these challenges. I saw something recently of Florida schools are going to have that posted, and in New York it's in the courtrooms because it's law. I mean, Congress passed it. That's the motto. And so it's very difficult for these groups to bring challenges to that.
Okay, going forward, what can we do to try and preserve, the really good aspects of America and not that let them destroy our past?
Well, I think standing up to the people who want to shame people who have a good idea about America, good views of our country, our history, I mean, because it's all based on, shaming and condemning. So if you emphasize the positive aspects of the American story, I think that's important. And it's also important to know what's being taught to your children. How are the teachers at local schools treating American history? What are the books that are being assigned for your kids to read? Really engage in that discussion. And the third thing I think people can do is explore their own family histories and their own American stories, because every single family in this country has a story. Some may be more interesting than others, but it's probably very interesting to you. So you can get together with your kids and really explore that. And through that, you're exploring American history.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Robbins. James-Robbins, RobbinsRobbins.com. Again, the name of his book is Erasing America. Thank you, Dr. Robbins. All the best.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.